Bevor ihr gleich die Folge mit Kuhn van Oestrom hört, noch ein ganz kurzer Hinweis. Ich bin zu dem Dreh mit meinem Kameramann MP gefahren nach Amsterdam. Das heißt, wir haben den Podcast komplett mitgefilmt. Ihr könnt also, wenn ihr möchtet, denn hier geht es ja nun wirklich auch um Workspace, also zum Anschauen, das Ganze auch auf YouTube sehen. Mein YouTube-Kanal ist einfach zu finden. Wenn ihr nach Christoph Magnussen auf YouTube schaut, dann erscheint der Kanal sofort. Unbedingt natürlich abonnieren, denn wir haben auch den gesamten Rundgang mitgefilmt. Das heißt, ihr bekommt am Dienstag den Podcast und am Donnerstag in dieser Woche den Rundgang zu Kuhn van Oestrom. Und wenn ihr jetzt den Podcast später hört, dann ist er jetzt auf YouTube. Also schaut einfach mal auf youtube.com/Christoph Magnussen oder einfach nach Christoph Magnussen auf YouTube suchen. Und dann bekommt ihr diesen Podcast auch zum Anschauen, denn bei Workspace geht es ja schließlich um die Inspiration, die wir im Workspace sehen. Jetzt viel Spaß.
Welcome to the On the Way to New Work podcast. I speak English today. Michael is not here. Katinka is not here, but I'm in Amsterdam and I have the big opportunity to meet Kuhn van Oestrom. Thank you for having us.
And you're very welcome here in Amsterdam.
Thank you. Thank you. And we already tried to record the podcast in Berlin, but I'm quite happy that we do it here because we just entered the building and this is what it's all about. You guys make buildings, and not just some buildings, but amazing buildings. I mean, we film it as well, so you have to look it up on YouTube if you just listen to the podcast now. But before we do that and before we dive into the building story, maybe you give a little bit of background for yourself. And who are you and how did you become the person you are today?
So I started in real estate almost 25 years ago. I studied economics in Rotterdam and I started to work for somebody who rented out rooms to students. And he was so successful that I figured out I would have to, it would be better for me to have my own real estate. And I borrowed a little bit of money and bought a very, very small house in Rotterdam and rented it out to students, then bought a second one. And that became a company with a whole portfolio. Slowly moved into real estate development. And then 12 years ago, I had a big wake-up call. I met Al Gore. And he told me about global warming. And of course, I'd read about it. And I thought it was more a political theme than a real theme. But he convinced me and I started to work on it. We put a lot of efforts in the company on it. Made a building that became energy neutral, started to invest more in it. Made the Edge building, which became famous and maybe a metaphor for a new generation of buildings. Buildings that are not only smart, but very sustainable, healthy, etc. And then we decided to just do that, only make the best building in town. And that's where we are today.
So this story is now super short, so you could put it to a press release. What I'm interested in when it comes to new work, you started in real estate and there are a lot of people in real estate and they are interested in money first. And there is, I guess, a backstory to the story to convince your company and also, of course, like, first of all, go into real estate, which is a big step. If you're young, I would be interested in that and how it was and how you started and how it felt and what is different today compared to the old days. And then this step in changing the model into more sustainable buildings. If everyone was saying, yes, let's do that, like today, or how that was.
So when I started, the real estate industry was very much an industry of face-to-face contacts, networking. You had the big conferences in that time in the south of France, the MIPIM, where everybody got together. Brokers were making a lot of money. And you know, if you started in the industry, one of the reasons to go there was that you would drive a BMW and feel proud that you were sort of in a game around a certain product, but the product was not so important. There was a lot of money behind it. Mm-hmm. These were the years of Donald Trump, and he was one of the big players in that game. The game over the last 25 years has completely changed. It has professionalized. And I'm not saying that there's not an element left of that old money game, but nowadays it's sustainability has become a main theme. The culture of the people has changed. Almost everybody has a university degree nowadays. There's all kinds of master educations around sustainability, but also around construction. The PropTech industry is disrupting everything that is being done at the moment. And there's a lot of talent flowing into the industry. I would say back in the day, if you would join a real estate company and your grandmother would ask you, hey, did you not get good grades in school? Is that why you have to work in real estate? And nowadays, some of the best, smartest people in the world enter that industry and are successful. So I think that's a great step forward.
How was it when you then decided, like you said, you met Al Gore? I guess this doesn't happen by accident, or like...
We won a competition for a new headquarters for a company called TNT, the express company. And the CEO was a big fan of Al Gore and a big fan of sustainability. And we were going to make his headquarters. And he then got Al Gore to come to the Netherlands, and he organized a CEO roundtable. And we were by far the smallest company in the room, but he asked me to come and join as well. And I, by that time, really thought it was, you know, a little bit of a Greenpeace kind of topic, and I wasn't really a fan of that kind of thinking. And then he said something very important. He said, you know, we're here in the Netherlands. If in the Netherlands the dikes break, then that is not a political theme. It is something where everybody in the Netherlands will stand shoulder to shoulder and rebuild the dikes. So this is the same kind of setting. Global warming is so big, it's so important, it has nothing to do with your political affiliation, it's something that you have to solve. And I said, wow, that's amazing, but you know, why companies, you know, why don't you talk to the government or to NGOs? And he said, well, in the end, it's the companies that make the products that cause the problems, and with the products also we can solve it. And then he asked me, he said, what kind of company do you have? And I said, well, I've got a real estate company. And he said, 40% of global carbon emissions come through buildings.
40%.
Some people say 38, but you know, that's that range.
Big leverage.
And not only that, he said, if you want to spend a dollar somewhere, it's best spent in real estate. Because even if you don't like sustainability, if you don't even think it's true, whatever, in most cases, you can invest a dollar and make it back in 7 to 10 years. And it's a no-brainer, especially with current interest rates, to do that investment. And we just have to start it and scale it up. Scalability is a problem though, but with the help of institutions like what Gore is doing, what Clinton was doing, we managed to do it in a lot of projects so far. And bit by bit, we're learning how to do it quicker, cheaper, and how to grow faster.
How was your, how big were you back then in the company?
I think we had like 60 people, 250 million turnover. So,
and they all said that's a great idea.
No. People were really like, you know, they were like, what the fuck? Well, this is completely different than what we're doing. And I went a little bit too far because I told people, let's get rid of the BMWs, and let's buy Toyota Priuses for everybody, okay, because we have to send a message to the market. Uh-huh. And people didn't like it. But interesting things happened. One guy raised his arm and said, hey, actually, I never told you this, but you know, I studied physics. And I said, yeah, I know that. He said, but I'm a specialist in climate modeling. And I worked for 2 years for Greenpeace. I never told you this story because I know it was not very popular here. But I was on a ship, you know, measuring ice in the North Pole and South Pole. And I know everything there is to know about, you know, global warming, what the underlying effects are, etc. And he said, I love to join the team that's going to research this and that's going to find solutions for it. Another person said, hey, Koen, do you really want to force me to give up my BMW and sit in the Toyota Prius? And I said, yeah, you know, we have to send a message to the market. It's important. He said, I don't like Toyota Priuses, but I have a better idea. He said, did you know that the emissions per kilometer of a Toyota Prius are 107 grams? And that a Mini Cooper has 104 grams. But a Mini Cooper is a way cooler car. So, you know, if you do sustainability, you can do this sort of somewhat negative, we're not allowed, let's punish ourselves, or some sort of Calvinistic sustainability. Or you can do Elon Musk style, Tesla, happy sustainability. Let's go happy. Let's be faster and more with more fun. And so we did a deal with BMW. We sold all our cars, and we got Minis in return. And we made a beautiful advertisement with 45 Minis that we had. And actually, people from university called us and said, hey, I want to work for that company where you get a Mini when you work there. And now people get bikes in our company, things are changing fast. But in that time, that was a big statement. And it was interesting because if a big company, let's say a Coca-Cola, would do a tender and say, we need a new office building in the Netherlands, and they would invite five developers, And four of those developers would drive up in really big cars, and you know, and with drivers, and then one team would arrive in two Mini Coopers, and that alone would tell a story and would give us, you know, an easy access to the hearts of the customer.
And what I like about we're coming more and more into the topic of sustainability as well in the podcast when it comes to new work. Of course, everyone's talking about it. We just had a discussion on the way. We were live streaming from the bus. We're on the way with the bus right now instead of flying. And one guy said, why do you do live stream for 20 people? This also takes energy. And then we said, well, yes, that's right, but there's a bigger leverage. I mean, if the two of us were like traveling by plane this week, there would be like 8 flights. Right now we share something about sustainability. So sending a statement versus like having an impact. And the number you just said about the leverage, the impact, 40%, that just blew my mind, because people, like, I don't have the numbers exactly how much is caused by planes, by cars, by anything else, but 40% is huge.
Yeah.
So if we look into that, just building or the whole industry or everyone who is like how could you like take that apart to give a bit more of background? Because you said scalability is the difficult thing.
Yeah, scalability is a difficult thing. And the difficult thing in the real estate industry is that 40% comes from existing buildings. Mm-hmm. And most of the focus at the moment is on new buildings. Mm-hmm. And if you build a new building, it's now possible to do that energy neutral or almost energy neutral. And so what you see is if new offices are being built, it's
the building process itself.
The building process.
And then like the edge is giving energy back to the grid. Okay.
And that's pretty cool. But that's not the problem. If you look at a city like Berlin, there is like, 2 million houses or so. And these 2 million houses, they produce a lot of energy. And now to go into these houses and these offices and these factories and churches and whatever is there, there's a lot of work to be done in these existing buildings. And ownership is very fragmented. The Netherlands is a little bit easier because 1/3 of the houses in the Netherlands are owned by social housing communities. And there are like 100 of those that own 30%, 35% of the stock. And there you can do a big deal, and they call it a green deal now at the moment. It's being written, and then all these houses year by year will be transformed. But in cities where that's not the case, then you have to find a way to maybe put a little bit of taxes on houses that are very unsustainable, and give a little bit of subsidy to people that are willing to make that step and upgrade their houses. But then the people living in those houses, they sometimes object that, and they are voters, and it's difficult for politicians to really have the courage to step up and do that. Luckily, I think voters are also now waking up, and you can see that also in Germany, the Grüne are very popular, and slowly these things are moving. What is missing? What is missing is that there should be really close contact between the companies and the government on how to write the legislation into doing this. And the companies that are spearheading this movement of change are very often the companies that are not at the table to discuss these changes. Very often, what does the government do? They will invite the largest construction company in the country. But these people are pretty old school in most cases. And so the trick will be to get some young thinkers, some people from the prop tech industry, put them at a table and say, hey, how can we change the model? How can we make sure that there will be a real urge for owners of real estate to pick this up and do things differently?
What do you think? I mean, we're now in a very positive market at the moment. So whenever there is pressure in the market, usually people start to make stupid things and crazy things. And then you have also like the large development companies. Maybe not all of them are driven by green or sustainability, but more by the money behind it. How could you solve it even if in a time when there's a lot of pressure? I mean, it seems like you have found a model here. Is that something you could transform to other companies?
Yeah, it's a missed opportunity that we didn't do it in the crisis. I think in Germany and for sure in the Netherlands, there were thousands of construction workers laid off. And there was a huge opportunity then to use that power to give it a go. Today, the pressure in the market is such that it's difficult to get anything done, infrastructure or investment in sustainability. But slowly the markets are getting back to normal again. Mm-hmm. And slowly we see cities waking up and seeing that it's basically in their scope that they can do something about the problem. And so we think that the next 3 to 5 years are going to be very important. There's a mismatch at the moment. There is some legislation, there is some subsidy arrangement, but even for a company like ours, and we have, you know, serious turnover, we have now more than 100 people working for us, to really see where the subsidies are going and how the organization in cities is pretty complex still. Especially for us, we work in different countries, and Berlin is completely different than London. London is different than Amsterdam, and it's a pity that we have Europe, but this is something that is not organized on a European level. And politicians could make life a little bit easier by harmonizing that.
The term new work, we were just quickly talking about it, and it comes to my mind for a reason. It was invented by a guy who is now 88 years old, Friedrich Bergmann. He came up with it like way beyond, like more than 40 years ago. And during the time when a lot of car manufacturer workers in the US were laid off. And he made the suggestion, they don't like their work anyways, because it's like they have to do it, they have to earn the money. But why don't we help them with half of the time that they are then off, and the other half they're working, instead of like laying half of them off. With half of the time, we help them to find out what they really, really want to do. Not what they just like to do and a little bit of job, but what they really, really want to do. And he helped them in Centers for New Work, that's how he called it, to find out these things. And of course, they work a little bit in the car manufacturing industry and a little bit, maybe something different. And this comes up to my mind because the industry, the real estate industry, is of course something that is closely connected to the economy. And if you just mentioned the workers and a lot of layoffs that you have, is maybe this what you really, really want to do connected to the sustainability topic? Could you see that with your own story or with the people in your company, especially when you said in the old days you went to a real estate company and said, oh, didn't you find a better job, and now people want to come? Is this changing for that reason, or how is it with your story?
It's a good question. I think that that's over time, these things are changing. I think that there's a couple of things. I think that in the times when stuff was hard, on the one hand, there was a lot more capacity to think about these topics, but everybody was trying to survive the 2008 crisis, and then it was not so easy to really put resources on it. What we noticed, by the way, is that in that time, it was actually possible for us to stay alive. The crisis in the Netherlands was pretty tough. But the money that the banks had, they were only doing in projects that were sort of the right projects, and sustainability played a role there. So that was good. I think a much bigger factor for us today is that there's a whole new generation entering the workforce, the millennial generation. And they are not so busy with making money and being successful, etc. They have other values that drive them. And sustainability, but not only sustainability, it's a whole new perspective on life and on life values, is what is important for them. And that is pushing this discussion also in the right direction. Because if I would allow people to make a project, and the project would just be a project about building something, making money with it, no values underneath, then right away people would say, hey, you know, it's not cool to work in this project, and can I work another project? But if I would tell them, go make a building in Hamburg, and we want to show the Hamburg market that we can push this to a different level, then they right away will do it. And what you see then is that this new generation is also not focused anymore on working, let's say, 9 o'clock in the morning to 6 o'clock in the afternoon and doing their things. They're everywhere and nowhere. They hate it if they have to file for holiday days and those kinds of bureaucratic things. So they're gone. But sometimes Sunday morning, 7 o'clock, you get emails from them. And they said, hey, I actually was watching YouTube videos, and now I found something, a new hydrogen system. We can do this in buildings as well. And why don't we figure out a way to do that in our project as well? And so things are upside down. And I had to learn that the top-down control mechanism that I grew up with 25 years ago are sort of dead. It doesn't work anymore. And that there's a new generation that wants to do things in a different way. Now, what is complicated is that we work with people from, let's say, I think the oldest person in the building, the company is almost 60, and the youngest is probably 20. And we have different ways of doing things in the company at the moment. And these common values keep that together. So if you work here, you're not interested in sustainability, then we don't really have a role for you. But the way things are done is quite different from the different generations that we see.
How did it change then over time when you say, okay, this also changed also with the generations, but maybe something that happened when you started to enter that field of sustainability that also changed in the organization? I mean, we will definitely talk about the building as well and how people communicate here, but like what happened in that time organizational-wise?
15 years ago, I think people would apply for a job at our company mainly because we were the most successful real estate company in the Netherlands, fastest growing, etc. And success was really measured by turnover and profit and growth. And today, I think people will apply for a job because they know that we are pushing innovation, that we're active in the PropTech industry, that we're doing so much on sustainability and health and smartness in buildings. And so people want to work in the forefront of change in the real estate industry, be a bit disruptive. They will come to us and say, hey, I want to work there. The values of these people is also different than the values 15 years ago. I'm not saying it's per se right or wrong, because I think everybody's also a product of his upbringing and the time that they grew up in. But it's quite a big change in the perspective people have.
When we were starting our conversation, I told you that in my company at Blackboard, we usually deal with communication tools. And we have a saying that we say the office space is the most synchronous communication tool you have. It's made for meeting people, giving a secure space, building trust and building relationships. And we entered here. And it was funny because like someone was at the door downstairs, although like these are not your floors downstairs, you were here in the fourth floor, but very open, said, hey, no worries, go up in the fourth floor. Someone was here, and you never have this feeling that there is a desk or a front here, but it's very open, people meet. So let's talk about the space you have here a little bit.
Yeah, and I was in New York a couple of weeks ago, and every time when you enter a building, you have to go to a desk, they make a picture of you, you have to show identification, you get a sticker, and with that sticker, you go into the building. And every time you sort of ask yourself, why? You know, why is this being done? Is this helping against terrorism or theft or what is it? Nobody has a story. They're just following procedure. We redesigned that here for this building. And here the whole thinking is it has to be a happy space. It has to be a space where you want to be. And even if your work is sort of done, then you don't really want to go home. You still want to sort of hang out and talk to people. And it must be cooler to work here than to work from home. And at the same time, we want to have collaboration. We want to have communication in the building. If you work, you could also work from home. You could also work for a coffee shop and you know, drink coffee and work away a little bit. But you want to be here in the office. And there's so many informal moments that you talk to people and that you communicate. Most of that communication anyway is about the business that we're doing. So if you look at the coffee machine here, we have good coffee, then people meet each other and then somebody says, hey, yesterday I heard a rumor that there's this new technology happening in buildings and now we're looking at that already. And that communication, those accidental meetings that you see, they are a big factor of the success of our company. Another thing is that if we would have top talent coming out of universities and they apply for a job here, but they also go, I don't know, maybe to McKinsey or they go to an accounting firm or Coca-Cola or whatever. In most cases, they enter buildings that are no fun and they get into a meeting room and the meeting room is sticky and, you know, there's no real enjoyment there and they can feel that. And then they come here and, you know, they don't have to show their passport to get in. They are invited by a cup of coffee. They see a space that makes them feel at home and they get a good feeling. And that good feeling, you know, helps us that they select us when they have to make a decision where to work. So there's a lot of factors you know, a completely different thing, but we hope that in the future we will not rent out space anymore per square meter, because square meters sort of don't make sense. Makes sense from a real estate perspective, but for a client, a customer, a tenant, he basically wants to have 100 people working somewhere, so he needs 100 workspaces. The question is, does he need 100? Because 20 people are always traveling, so maybe he needs 80. And then the next question is, but what is really relevant for him is what is sort of the productivity coming out of that group of people. And if we can make a building where the productivity is such that people don't go ill anymore, where more work is done because there's some magic in that building happening that is not happening anywhere else, then actually they're willing to pay more rent for that space. And we're in the process of measuring that. So we are measuring what kind of air quality can we have in the building, what does sunlight do to concentration of people, and there's hundreds of factors that you can take into a picture, and even use AI to measure what is, or to basically analyze what is happening exactly with people. And then in the future, we hope that our rent will not be paid by square meter, but by productivity of that group of people working in the building. And that would be cool.
Love that approach. And I was just thinking of the coffee machine story. Did you know that Steve Jobs wanted to have the washrooms at Pixar in just one place of the building to make everyone force run at the washroom at the same time to like bump into each other by accident? Because he said this unplanned collaboration is where it comes from. And I love that story, even if it's most likely just made up, but I still love that story because it's true. Like you bump into people, you talk to them, and then something happens.
On that story, we also, we've done the same thing here. We have quite a big floor, but only one set of toilets. And then also we don't have male and female toilets.
We just learned it, yeah. We just ran into the toilet.
Yeah, that's so old school. Some people are not defined by male or female anymore. And so that discussion is also solved on. It was some people had to get used to it. Ladies doing their hair in front of the mirror, guys walking around were like, you know, uncomfortable. So we made a separate room where people can do makeup if they want. But we have to rethink some things. Not everything that was done 50 years ago is still valid.
Yeah, everyone is running here. Like MP is filming, so this is a podcast that you can also watch if you wanted. So maybe we do that. We take a walk around. I love the details. My wife is much better in the details, I have to admit, like what colors to use. And I can just feel that there's very good, calm, but productive energy in here, like from the floor to the ceiling, a lot of wood, a lot of light. So there's a lot of stuff here I would love to learn about. So we now take you guys along on a walk. So you have to follow us by your ears, and we just make sure that we also tell what we see and what we talk about.
Great.
Let's do that. And you choose whatever, where we start, and I try to learn as much as I can.
So one of the main features that we see in the building is that there has to be a central place where people can meet each other. And the central place for us is the atrium. Mm-hmm. I think if you would draw for yourself the ideal village that you want to live in, you would start with a little square, and the little square has a cafe and maybe a church and, mm-hmm. and maybe some other places. But the square is in the middle, and that's where everybody gets together. And in a building, you want to have the same thing. You want to feel a connection to the other floors. You want to have a ground space where you can meet each other. And of course, you want to have outdoor spaces. And all these elements are connected through the atrium. Mm-hmm. And in the atrium, there's a very big staircase, which makes sure that people don't take the elevator so much, but slide
all the
floor
way through.
By floor, from the ground floor to the first, to the second, to the fifth. And feel connected to that building a little bit. In the building also, there's a lot of green. It's now possible to have walls completely covered
all real plants.
Real plants that you see over there. And they actually take also a lot of carbon out of the air and put more oxygen back in it.
And you guys measure this already?
We measure that. And these are systems that, these are not just experiments. This has been done before in other buildings. And we have picked the ones that are the most effective in doing that. And so that if you take 50 square meters of a wall and make it green, that really has the maximum impact on the quality of the building.
So how are they called if someone would want to look that up? Where could they find it? Or like
Now you over ask me, so I have to.
But well, they can write us, and then I forward it.
Absolutely, absolutely. We can post that. Mm-hmm. But it is a system that is made to have the maximum impact. And you can see there are little holes in the green, and people tend to go sit in there because they want to be surrounded by little trees. It's like working in a forest in a way.
Yeah, it looks like. I mean, that was definitely when we looked here. Nice to see.
Now, one other thing is that next to carbon emissions of a building, for us, material use is very mm-hmm. important. If you look downstairs here in the atrium, the floor of the atrium is a beautiful natural stone. Mm-hmm. That natural stone used to be the outside facade of the building. So this was an existing building that we bought.
Oh, wow.
And we redeveloped it, we opened it up, and the facade was not usable anymore. We had to take that off. But instead of throwing it away, we polished it again. Nice. And use it as the floor in the building. And that reuse, we call that part of the circular economy. Mm-hmm. That is something that that is being used more and more. maybe we can walk around a little bit and I can tell you more about the building. The building was a little bit smaller, so we added two floors in the building. And then we said, let's not work with concrete, because concrete in itself is not a great material. Of course, it's strong and cheap. But it's bad for the environment, and so we decided.
Why, like, for people who like never read of that, why is that? Like, is it so much energy to produce it?
There's a lot of energy used to produce it, and there's a lot of chemicals used to get the right substance together, and these chemicals are basically bad for the environment, mm. and all the energy use is also really bad. If you take a piece of wood, this wood is grown in a commercial way. It has taken up a lot of carbon emissions in this growth that is in here, but mm. that will stay in here. And these columns are made in a way that if one day they want to tear down this building, they can take this out again. It's not glued or made in a certain way, but they can take this out and use it again in another building. Oh. And it's designed for that. And that is what we call circular thinking.
Yeah.
Doesn't cost extra money. It's just really that the engineers say, okay, so what if we had to tear down this building? What are we going to do with this column? So let's fix it in a way that we can unfix it again. Try that with a concrete column. You can see, you know, if a building is being torn down, they take these big drills and they drill that to the end. And that's not necessary with this product.
Nice. Small stuff, and you can use the intelligence to solve it.
Yeah. We have an open workspace here, and back in the day, I think people's ego were fed by the workplace that they had, and they could basically say, you know, I'm a senior now, mm. or I'm a director, and so I get the corner office. We don't do that. Basically, nobody has his own office here.
So where do you work when you're here?
I work sort of, never in the office, yeah. So I'm always traveling. Okay, so I just land somewhere and open up my laptop.
Yeah.
And it's not black and white. So there's a couple of people that really need a place for themselves. Administration, for example, HR. HR has a room because sometimes they have to have sensitive conversations. So you have to make sure that you don't make it too black and white and too fixed, but be very rational and be open to the wishes that are in the organization. And this organization can be different than another organization.
How did you do? Like, did you talk with everyone in the beginning and say, like, what would you want? I mean, we see couches here. We have, it's quiet, although it's open. And it doesn't feel like just one open space. So you have corners here. So how did you came up with the design and the ideas for that space?
We experimented in the former office that we had, mm-hmm. and there we tried out different ways of working together. And then we formed a group, people that were excited about this, and asked them, hey, what is the ideal way to work for you guys? And for us, sound was a major thing, because if you work open space, then people will very easily get disturbed by the sound. And we are also experimenting with that. We walk a little bit further. We have a waterfall, and that was a little bit of a test to see if you have certain background noise, is it then easier to work? It turns out noise in itself is not a problem if you're working, but it's the kind of noise that is there. If it's sort of even background noise, it's different. So if you hear, then there's two things. We have the water there, and then also we have sound coming from the speakers, making sure that there's a certain relaxing atmosphere here. And I can tell you, these desks are always the first to be filled in a day, in the morning.
Interesting. And you have everywhere different floors. This is now again wood.
Yeah, we have wooden floors here and also there. This is also a little bit the design of the interior architect. And one other thing that we did, which is really interesting, is ceilings are always boring in offices because ceilings have become part of the installations. And in this case, we have ceilings that provide both the cooling and the warming of the building. It comes from the same system, but they're always white and always sort of boring. And so we gave them some colors. And partly they're white and partly they have a brownish, greenish color that makes it a little bit more funky and a bit more cool to be there. And they have little holes in it, and that helps to spread the right temperature in the building, but also helps to get the noise levels on the right level.
Right.
Because it absorbs the sun.
You have plants everywhere.
Plants everywhere.
Hanging from the ceiling, on the ground, everywhere. We need more plants in our office.
Well, the other thing that we have, of course, is a place to do meditation or do yoga.
Nice.
And we have a massage chair, and twice a week we have a person that comes in here and allows people to do
that
massage.
That would be my space here. That and, would definitely be my space. That's a hammock.
We have a hammock that you can lie in and look outside and look at the green.
There is a graveyard next across the street, so you are reminded of that there will be a time that you can make sure your work is worth it.
Yeah.
Right now.
Yeah, the opinions about the graveyard are very different. Some people find it relaxing because in a way graveyards are beautiful.
Yeah.
And with old trees and it's sort of a quiet perspective. Other people find it too much in their face and they don't like it so much. But also here, the space we have is green, it's relaxing. It's not being used as much as we expected.
Yeah.
So it's still the case that people come to the office to work, communicate. They don't come so much to relax and chill out at an office. So yeah, the jury is still out whether we really need it.
We have one room in our office. It's much smaller. It's our studio. That is, we call it the home office because there is a bed in it and there is a meditation mat in it that you can use. And it stayed like a normal room. And I use it quite frequently, I have to admit. It's nice. You can close the door and it's much smaller. So it's very cozy and you cannot look inside. But I also think that people have a hard time like doing relaxing stuff at the office.
I think
they
also
meet other people usually.
We are growing and it will be a matter of time before some team says, hey, that space is empty and we'll, you know, shut up, we'll meditate whole day, we're going to sit there and use that space.
Leave it with all the plants and then you have the energy, nice.
Now, one of the other things is that we have an outside terrace and today the weather is not so great, but in summer this is being used a lot. We also have a hot tub, and especially in parties, then people tend to jump into the hot tub and bring a bottle of beer and hang out there.
So you still can have the good times of the real estate business combined with sustainability and the hot tub. That's good.
It's part of the health. Part of the health story.
I mean, as you said, it needs to make still in the end fun, and you should like what you do.
Now, one of the other things that we created is what we call the library, and one of the wishes that came out of that group of people that were talking about the building is to have space where people are not talking, and the space that you see here has that. It doesn't have a lot of workspaces, there's maybe 10, but people who sit there know that nobody's talking and that they can really focus on reading a contract or writing a piece or doing something that is completely quiet. Mm. It's always being used. I think it's great that you know, hey, I work in a, let's say, a collaborative environment and I see people and people can talk to me, but there's also a space if I sit there, don't talk to me, leave me alone and let me do my thing.
Which is a hard thing if you just have open space.
That's our thing in open space. What some people do in open space is that they have headphones and noise cancellation headphones. And that's also a little bit of a message like, hey guys, I'm focusing on something and leave me. But the library is a better way. Mm. And it's common used in universities, I guess. And in universities, it's also a place where people are quiet and studying and being left alone. And that right to be left alone is something that is so vital now that we have phones that are ringing the whole day, open offices where people say, hey, I saw you, let's connect or let's do a coffee together. Mm. But it gives people basically a place, you know. This is a message. It's a nice message, but it is a message. Leave me alone.
Yeah. Hier kommt die ganz kurze Werbeunterbrechung und wir haben einen Werbepartner, den ich gut kenne, denn ich habe in diesem Jahr mehrfach die Services genutzt. Es geht um die Firma Kultcamper mit C vorne geschrieben, C-U-L-T, Kultcamper. Und warum erzähle ich das so begeistert? Ich habe in diesem Jahr tatsächlich mehrere Wochen lang Camper gemietet, also sehr coole Camper, muss man sagen. California, VW California, also so der Camper, den man auf der Straße sieht. Und Kultcamper vermietet in Schwalmstadt in Hessen und in Flensburg in Schleswig-Holstein, also an zwei Standorten deutschlandweit, diese komplett neuen Camper, den Grand California, das ist der große, und den California, das ist wirklich so dieser typische Camper, den ihr vor Augen habt, ne? VW-Bus, wir sind dort mit Familie unterwegs gewesen, ich war in Kroatien, ich bin durch ganz Deutschland getourt und Michael und ich haben auch Podcasts im Camper aufgenommen. Für mich ein Riesen-Highlight, ich genieße das total, einsteigen, losfahren, endlich mal nicht dieses ganze Flughafen einchecken und der ganze Stress. Ich finde es richtig cool und was mir besonders viel Spaß gemacht hat, ich habe lange recherchiert, eben wo kann ich was mieten. Die Jungs machen das extrem cool persönlich, das finde ich großartig, also die Kommunikation ist super persönlich, total unkompliziert, alles hat gut funktioniert, die Wagen sind nagelneu und haben immer noch mit guten Tipps auch drumherum geholfen. Und deswegen freue ich mich, dass Sie hier als Werbepartner bei uns dabei sind. Also wärmste Empfehlung von meiner Seite für ein Produkt, für das ihr jetzt schon, wenn ihr im Sommer, sage ich euch ganz klar, einen Camper haben wolltet, euch das anschauen müsstet, denn es ist deutschlandweit sehr schnell ausgebucht. Geht auf kultcamper.de, dort könnt ihr euch die Busse anschauen, die Jungs vermieten, und gerne bei Fragen auch zu mir kommen. Ihr könnt aber auch auf meinem YouTube-Kanal gucken, da ist der Camper, den ich hatte zu sehen, oder auch auf Instagram, und ansonsten alle Informationen auf kultcamper.de.
About what I recognized when we walked through here, we have very good lighting everywhere. So what did you learn about light and how it influences work, and what do you do about it? Because there are warm lights, there are colder lights, there is a lot of daylight.
Yeah. So the problem if you want to make a building and make it really sustainable is that sort of the cheapest way to do this is to make a bunker. No windows anymore, and then you don't lose any heat, or you can make it cool, and that's it. Now the good thing with glass is that glass is becoming more and more intelligent. So glass has the ability to allow you to enter the right amount of energy, the right amount of light, and also the right light, because light has a whole spectrum of different colors that you can use. And certain kinds of light are better for concentrating than other parts of light. Then again, we're also experimenting here with other parts of light, and the thing is that if you're a human being, then you wake up in the morning, it's sort of half light, and then it gets lighter during the day, and then when it becomes evening, you know, your circadian rhythm defines that your system already recognizes at 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock, that things slowly are getting darker. Then somebody came up with the idea to make offices and then have these big TL things, and where light is constant from 8 o'clock in the morning to 6 o'clock in the evening, you have the same amount of lumen that are being sent towards you. That's not good for your health. And that's why people tend to not sleep very well and not be focused on the right moment, and, you know, go down yet again.
Because it's too much and you don't have this natural rhythm.
Exactly. And so what is possible now with light is to play with that rhythm. We don't have that yet in the whole building, but we have a couple of workplaces where that is being done, and where people are sort of affected by that thing. The same thing is that some people want to have a lot of light in their workplace, and other people want to have less. And the possibility here in the office is that with your app, you can change the light setting, and then you can have more or less amount of life.
So I have an app as an employee and I could say I want less or more.
And the thing is with the light that the building code everywhere in the world gives you an obligation to give you a lot of light, and which is not very good for sustainability. But also, if you work behind a computer, you don't always want to be in that amount of light. Sometimes it's okay to have a little bit less light and then to have your computer in front of you and work with that. And you can do your personal setting, and that is a lot better than having that in the old school way. Let me show you a couple of other things. One of the things where we learned and where we made mistakes is that in the whole well procedure tells us to separate plastics from coffee, from organic materials and all kinds of other things. Now, the funny thing in the Netherlands is that in Amsterdam, all that stuff is collected. But the problem for them is they just throw it together. So even if you deliver it organic and in plastic and all these other
they
things,
they put it together.
And why is that? Because the factory that they have, that they built in the city of Amsterdam, probably the best factory in the world when it comes to garbage, the factory itself separates it. So we're separating it here, it then gets thrown together and then gets separated again in the factory. We haven't figured it out because we find it so unnatural not to get plastic together and glass together and paper together. But right now it's a failure.
We met a guy during sailing, and my wife, he was on the other boat right across. My wife talked to him, and he works in Hamburg, I don't know, somewhere in northern Germany. He said they have problems with certain things to put them apart, not with everything, but with certain things. So I cannot remember exactly where he said, like, this is what you really have to separate, but not the usual stuff, like not plastic so that's interesting.
The theory in Amsterdam was that they said the people are not very good in separating garbage in the right way, and the factory can actually do that. And so there's a chain of garbage moving, and then the things are being picked out that need to be picked out, and that is fully automated, and that works better, it seems, than the way we would do it.
How do you connect all the screens and stuff? Like, what do I have here? Do we work in the cloud? Is it all Macs? No, it's not. There are also some PCs.
Yeah, we have both. We were completely on Macs, but which is great for the designers. But we do a lot of work, all the sensoring and all the information that comes out of the sensors is mostly going to the Azure cloud, so it's the Microsoft cloud. And we have a whole bunch of Windows computers also to do analytics and to work in that way. Nowadays, computers are so great that you can do everything you want with them. So it's not so black and white. If we look down here, what we see is that we think that the perfect building nowadays is a building that has both bigger companies and smaller companies and also co-working space. And if you look down here, you see people that just have a membership and that can work here for days, or they can be here full time. They can completely choose what they want to do. And we notice that that gives a sort of energy to the building that you don't get when it's just offices rented out to big companies.
So you have your own work, like shared workspace, co-working built in.
In here. And one of the, it's now not very busy because it's a autumn holiday in the Netherlands this week. But normally it's sort of thriving here with a lot of people. Some people are complaining it's too busy, so you have to be used to working in a certain vibe and energy to like this.
But your experience is that it actually gives more energy to the whole workspace than it takes.
Okay. Although sometimes I'm afraid that there's also a lot of startups that are more dreaming about being a startup and drinking a lot of coffee than that they're actually really getting a lot of stuff.
That's part of the game. Part of the game. You have, like, no meeting room looks the same.
No, all the meeting rooms are different.
All different. Which makes them very inviting.
Screens everywhere, and you can sit down at a table, and sometimes people don't like to sit at a table, they want to sit at a couch. We have a room here where maybe a little bit as a gimmick, but we have a 3D room, and everything in this room is 3D printed. Mm-hmm. We think that is a technology that is not ready yet.
Not ready yet.
No, it's a gimmick. So yeah. it's nice to make a chair out of 3D printing. In the future, we might do buildings as 3D printing, but and that is happening already. China is experimenting with it, but it's not not so amazing.
This is, by the way, a technology. This Friedrich Bergmann, the New Work guy,
yeah.
like saw in the 70s coming up as an important technology and part of New Work, like producing cool. your own stuff. So so this whole topic is very technology driven, and I can see how you use technology to drive sustainability. That's yeah. an interesting leverage. I like that.
Then again, what we find important as a company is to try everything out, and some things become a little bit of hype, and other things don't get the attention that we think it should get. But for us, 3D printing has become a little bit of a hype. We find it interesting, we're following it, but for us it's not a big thing right now. Sound, for example, what we just heard, and also a smell that you can have in the building, are things that are not being talked about a lot, but are really important to get the right atmosphere in a building. And that is more being done in shops at the moment than it is in office environments, but it is it really has an influence.
We had completely by accident yesterday at the office music on.
Yeah.
I don't know why we were on a workshop, and everyone said at the end, like super relaxed music in the background, everyone said it was much better.
Yeah.
And I'm like, so when you know here talk about sound, I would never imagine that you could have that sound and could work like that, but I like the idea.
Well, one other thing is that we want to give information. We have a lot of visitors in the building that come to see what the building is about, but also what our company is about. And what we can do is we have a touchscreen. And in the touchscreen, we can show videos or do presentations. Mm-hmm. And of course, then if you do that, it doesn't work. Ah, there it is. This is the new headquarters for Vattenfall that we are seeing now in Berlin. It's being built at the moment.
Ah, you built it. Okay.
It's the largest wooden hybrid construction in Germany currently. And it will have beautiful shapes and sculptures in a huge atrium. Remember the story I told you about the Italian square that we want to have with staircases in it. And this is a great example. In Germany, people have to get used to this because there's more than I think in other countries, the fact that people actually like their little rooms.
Yeah.
And even in our team, we had somebody who said, hey, I have studied for 15 years and now I have a right to a room. And now you're going to tell me we're going to work open space. And at the same time, what you see, I guess, all over Europe, especially also in Germany, is that the tech scene is disrupting things quite fast. But the interesting thing is there's the old way of doing things, the old way of working, big office buildings with a lot of small rooms and people working there. And then suddenly you see startups in old factories. And one of the things that I find interesting is that we were talking to the leadership of Deutsche Bank. Mm-hmm. And then somebody said, why is it that a super talented person coming from the WHU or WHUH university doesn't want to work for me, but wants to work for a shitty fintech startup in Berlin and works in a bad building instead of the beautiful Deutsche Bank towers in Frankfurt? And, you know, I looked at him and I said, well, you know, if I walk around in your towers, actually just when you enter and you have to show your passport, you're not allowed to get in. It's pretty clear that if you walk into that old factory in Berlin, the vibe, the energy is just so much better. And that has to do with all these little elements that I
can see how this can definitely have a big impact. And if I imagine, I mean, Vattenfall is a company that really has to show, okay, how do we really go into sustainability? And if this is now energy neutral, even giving back energy, it's a bold approach. And the interesting thing is changing a workspace helps people to see that there's change happening, and that gives different energy then to the whole group.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. One of the other things I wanted to show you is we have two robots here. One robot is a delivery robot, and so you can order a coffee on your workplace.
Oh,
and
then, nice.
The coffee is being placed in here, and it drives to you, and then it talks to you, and it does all kinds of nice things.
So you put it like, where do you put it?
You put it in here.
Okay.
Do you know how to open it? No.
Let me see. Maybe we have to talk to him. Hello.
It's not being used a lot, to be honest. And then there's a second robot, and that is a robot that we have in every office
for video conferencing.
Yeah, and we can talk to people in New York, Boston, London, etc., where we have other of these. And I can make the robot in New York drive to the person that I want to talk to, and then talk to him. And then he will see me on the screen. And also there, to be really honest, it's a bit more complicated than just using the screens. And so we bought a couple of those, and we tried to experiment with it. It works. But it's not a real solution.
But what I like is, and what you do is, you test the things. Like, you're not like, no, it's stupid, we don't do it. You test it, and that's much more important when it comes to the attitude of saying, okay, let's see how it works, and this is most likely how you get to the numbers and the idea of making it more productive. Wow.
I'll show you the kitchen. Us being a real estate company, of course, means that we have a couple of maquettes, models, where. These are a couple of the buildings that we're building at the moment. This is called the Valley, and it's sort of a rock shaped with offices and residential on top. A lot of people like hybrid buildings with different functionalities in one building. We're not always fan of it because it gives you a lot of headaches in how you have to do the logistics in the buildings. But this building is going to be spectacular. And when it's done in 1.5 years, it's being built at the moment, then it will be one of the most photographed buildings in the Netherlands.
Wow.
Another sort of interesting building that we're doing is a building also here in Amsterdam. And it has a roof. Currently, it was an existing building.
Oh, so the roof comes up.
No, that's only for the
showing reasons.
That's only for the showing.
That's good.
Currently, it's a building with floors that are 8,000 square meters per floor. So that's a lot. And it has an inner garden that's never been used. And we said, hey, to make it an Italian square, coming back to that atrium idea again, we have to put a roof on top. And that doesn't sound very good. And we have to make staircases in the atrium. To make sure that that people are going to use that inner space. We did that. It's being rebuilt at the moment. And the whole building will get a completely different vibe. This building also was an energy consumer like crazy. But when we're done, it's going to be completely energy neutral.
So you can also rebuild a building and make it energy neutral.
Exactly. Yeah. We are, by the way, lucky in this case that we have a lot of roof, and so we have a lot of space to
for
do solar
panels and stuff.
But we also dig a big hole in the bottom, and where we can do what is called heat and cold storage. It's a way to store heat in the summer, pump it up in the winter again, and that helps us to be more efficient.
We just had the CEO of Void in the podcast. I don't know if he, like, which episode he will be on, but he told us that, which I didn't know, Norway is actually producing 100% of their energy in water pumps. So he produces the water pumps for that. And I was, well, I didn't even have that on my mind that this is such an important technology when it comes to that. But of course, in the Netherlands, it would be harder to use water pumps, I guess, than solar panels. You need a bit more mountains to use that.
That's the one thing we don't have.
Yeah, exactly.
So here we get into the kitchen. And one of the things that we want to make sure is that people
really nice.
Get their food. But there's always healthy stuff available. I must admit, there's a secret box where if you really need sugar, you can also get the bad stuff.
We have that too.
But there's some nuts, there's always fresh fruit, bananas, and people can do that here. There's a good coffee machine, so that's being used. And there's the possibility to work here, but also to play ping pong. We have a Formula One car. And,
so that's the new kicker table. You have a kicker table, which is the new work myth. But the new kicker tables in the Formula One car.
Yeah.
That's
and what is
cooler.
So interesting is that if Formula One is being done on Sunday, and it's, for example, last weekend it was Osaka, I think, in Japan, then people are racing that race. And they like it because then when they're watching television on Sundays, they can actually see how difficult it is to do a certain curve and to make that work.
I like that. Fantastic.
I'm not very good at it, but it's
but I see you have an internal ranking here.
There's a ranking, and people are very... and sometimes we also do it on the big screen that you saw in the beginning. That's so overwhelming that then you get nervous and sick. And
I learned a lot right now from just walking around. From battery wise, I know MP is getting nervous because how many minutes we have left on the battery?
7, but I have a spare battery.
So. And the Red is not the most energy efficient camera on the market, I have to say, but it's the best camera to film a podcast.
Do we want to walk a little bit through the building and do other floors as well?
We should, but then we should switch batteries before we do that. Because I'm learning and have a lot
of. I'm grabbing a quick Coke.
Yeah.
Can I get you anything?
That's a great idea. I would want to.
This is also one of the things that is important for us. We also have beer, but on the best place, we have the Heineken Zero.
Okay.
And what we see now is that it's being. That people drink as much alcohol-free beer as normal beer.
Good. Here's a health advice. 50% of Dutch adults drink, so fast. Eating 50 grams of unsalted nuts a day lowers LDL cholesterol and the risk of heart diseases. Okay. I grab some nuts. Now, it's what I like best is that you can, what you like have in theory, what you say in theory, you can feel in the building. You can like really walk through it and you feel the energy and as I said, quiet, focused, productive, not hectic, much different. I would say the best workspace we've seen, and we've seen a lot of workspaces. And people tend to ask me like, what is a good example for a new workspace? And what our job usually is then to find the best digital tools to connect the digital and the physical world, because there are also wrong ways in the digital world that pull people out of that.
One of the things that we've done for the first time in the first Edge building, and where this is the follow-up, is that you see next to the lighting, there's a small little box, and it has some sensors in it there.
Yeah.
And these sensors are very important for us because they can measure the light intensity, they can measure the amount of CO2 that we have. What is being measured is the occupation of the space and a whole bunch of other things. And why is that relevant? Because we want to see how the building behaves. And what we can now follow is that if on a Sunday afternoon there's one person entering the building, and a lot of buildings in the world, then all the lights go on. And everywhere the temperature gets pushed up to 21 degrees. And in this building, it's possible to do that in a different way, and also to evaluate that and to bring energy costs down, just from the perspective to actively manage what is happening in the building. So there are like 20,000 sensors in this building that are measuring that. And then we have thousands of sensors more that you don't see, but there are in the piping. And what is happening a lot before something goes wrong in the building, then often the pressure in the piping is different. And so before something explodes or before something goes weird, then the sensors can already measure that. And we call that predictive maintenance. And then the company that is doing the management here of the piping and other things, they then get a message and they know that they have to act before things really go wrong.
Which makes perfect sense.
Funny enough, technology that has been around for 30 years, that's being used in the pharmaceutical industry and other industries, but never made it into the real estate industry. And now finally, slowly, those things are changing.
I like that. Okay, so you can make stories around every technology here.
So we walk down the stairs here?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, this is for an office building, an interesting staircase. But as you said, wood makes more sense than concrete.
It wasn't possible for fire reasons to have the atrium staircase also going here.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, we had to have this staircase. So this is part of the, let's say, the co-working space. And there are smaller company startups that have their spaces here. And it's so popular that we have a waiting list.
I can imagine, definitely.
And here we have a kitchen, and people are having lunch here. But it's also a bit of an event space where, as a company, you can rent it. And on Friday afternoons, you can do events here. Mm-hmm. And things. And this is the forest that we were talking about.
Yeah, that's really nice. What do you do if the plants don't survive? Certain, like, can you, how is that? How's that done? Ah, okay.
There's a company that guarantees that goes in the right way.
Yeah.
It's always in the beginning that they have to get used to it a little bit. What we like is that in a building like this, you can have completely different tenants. So, for example, there's a headhunter here. SICK is Software Improvement Group. That's a software company. And then you have all the small startups left and right. Downstairs is a big event space. So it's a mix. But everybody here enjoys the fact that that's an energetic space and where people get connected to each other.
I can imagine.
There are collective Friday afternoon drinks and, people get to know each other. They get drunk together on Friday afternoon.
Which helps to build relationships.
I guess so. We have a lot of speakers here that come, and that part is not organized by us, but we have a company called Epicenter that runs the co-working here. And
you have a lot of different furniture, very experimental stuff that I see here as well.
And also there's some racing.
Oh, the racing again.
And this is the Cuddle Puddle, and that's a place where presentations are done. This is rented out a lot to companies.
Wow. Okay. A lot of different colors, but still matching. And for example, large companies often seem to have like everything in the corporate color, everything needs to be corporate. Like, do you help them then to stay away from that a little bit and say, hey, we need to change it in certain ways?
Yeah. And what we've seen here is, of course, there's a lot of companies that have their headquarters somewhere in the Netherlands. So they have 5,000 people working there. And what they often do is that they take 20 people that work on innovation and put them here in the building. Mm-hmm. Because they know that for these people, it's so important to be part of a certain ecosystem and to be part of certain energy. And they can be banks and they can be, you know, pharmaceutical companies and all kinds of different players. But they do want to be part of a vibe that is in a building like this. And we could make this building 4 times bigger and still it would be filled to the top because people like this new way of working. Mm. And we use this, for example, as well. We don't have to have our own event space like this. But we rent it once a month or so. Mm-hmm. And then somebody gives a presentation and orders something funny happening, or there's a big birthday or whatever. And then we have the space here. And that makes life easier.
Yeah, I can imagine. Interesting idea to like share that.
And also here you see what you can do with a little bit of design, that you can create spaces that are different than what you typically have in an office building.
And yeah, where you would not imagine that there is a space. Yeah.
Now we think that a building like this should also have.
It's near me.
We have smart lockers.
Mm-hmm.
And now we go to the gym.
Oh, nice.
And so it's a real gym, and there's
everything you need.
Everything you need to really get going, and there are lessons here. You can do boxing, and
we need that. We need something to box at our office. Nice.
The different ingredients to make that happening.
How long did it take you to like rebuild everything from?
I think in this case about a year.
Just 1 year.
All the car places that you see here have facilities for electrical cars. What we wanted to do is allow companies only to bring cars that are electrical and not allow them to bring any other cars. But when we were doing the renting out, that got us a little bit into trouble. And so we decided to not just go that black and white. But what you can see is that there's a space for bikes. Mm-hmm. There's also a lot of outside spaces for bikes. In the Netherlands, that's the way to get to work. But there's also, you know, a facility for every car to charge itself.
Charging.
There was one difficulty, and that is that in the calculations, We sort of forgot that we wanted to be energy neutral. Mm-hmm. But if you see the amount of electricity that is being used by these cars, then it turned out that in the end we were not energy neutral. And now we have to add more solar to push up and be energy neutral with.
Interesting. It takes so much energy.
Yeah. The charging of a car actually is that's a very big computer, so to speak, that you have to charge. And we have two floors here, this floor and then one downstairs. That's all being used for charging. And that's more than what we anticipated. And so also we learn and we see, you know, I stand on stage and I say, oh, we only make energy neutral buildings. But then we also do electrical cars, but then that doesn't fit together.
Okay.
And what I find that interesting that, you know, that also when I'm on stage and somebody really knows his shit, he can ask me a question and say, so do you include your charging of your cars? And I'm like,
we work on that.
Yeah. And that's the great thing about innovation, that in real life, things are sometimes more complicated than you expect, but then you find a solution and then you really push the bar.
And if you want to leverage, the message is important to change the behavior and then to find something that really makes a difference.
So one other small thing is that in this space, it's actually open. So there's like a gate on the outside, but there's fresh wind here. Yeah. And the great thing that is doing that is that then we don't have to have circulation flowing 24/7, 7 days a week. There's a little bit of sort of emergency flow that we can activate that has to do with fire protection, but otherwise it's just natural air
going through.
And then we don't need to have big compressors and big air flowing that is not man-made or that is not nature-made.
Nice.
So yeah, even here in the parking garage, you see a level of innovation that otherwise you wouldn't see.
Yeah, I can really get the sense of an idea of like how to really get going this game of changing and making an impact at the same time having a good working atmosphere. Because, as I said, you work with so many different materials and a lot of plants. This is definitely something we've seen in the Netherlands more often than anywhere else. And this makes a big, big difference. Like in New York, for example, where you just said, you usually have this typical without no plants meeting atmosphere.
So this is an event space that we have and it's rented out to a company. That might be a company that has also a group of people working here in the building, but it could also be completely random from the outside world. They probably have invited a lot of people and then later on they have drinks. And so almost every night, it's sort of filled here with people that are then having a beer and that are listening to a conference. And some of these things are open also for people working in the building and other ones are closed. But it's a constant movement and energy that we're seeing. Hi.
Yeah, and at the entrance, I had the feeling we're entering a coffee shop, not an office building.
And to be honest, I don't have a clue even what is happening today, but because there's something every day. And
that's a good sign.
I could follow it, but that's often not how it works. And here the coffee is really great. We have a person that's really trained to make real coffee instead of just the random stuff that we see a lot in buildings. And I guess that we agree if you compared it to that American example that I gave, entering New York,
yeah,
a building.
Yeah, totally different.
So which basically if it gives you a message, you're not welcome here. And here it's...
Here you come in and you think like, okay, you enter a super nice coffee shop. Someone is welcoming you and saying like, this is where you got to go.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's a little bit the story that I wanted to tell you.
Fantastic. Thank you for the whole tour, the deep dive, learned a lot about sustainability and your story. So what makes you wake up in the morning and go to work? What is your why you get out of bed, except for the alarm clock or kids being early up?
For a long time, it was that I wanted to do things different in the real estate industry and be a bit disruptive. But I've been following the whole sustainability debate and the news that we see now, the latest numbers on temperature rising, water levels coming up, is that I'm quite pessimistic on where we are.
Yeah.
And that I think it is very important to really focus on that main theme.
Yeah.
And so more and more, and now having children, yeah, you get the feeling that it's so important to do more, yeah, to leave them something that is worthwhile.
And with 40% in the real estate industry, the leverage is huge. Thank you so much. So to end the podcast, for everyone who was following the whole tour now on the podcast, yeah, thank you for giving us such a deep dive and taking the time, learning a lot of how new workspace can change the industry. And if people want to stay in touch with your company and like follow what you do, what will be the best way?
We have a website that the company is called Edge Technologies, and our website is easy to find. Under my name Koen van Oostrom, I post a lot of things, mm-hmm, and it's possible to follow us and to be part of the debate, to see it. Sure. And I gave a TED talk a couple years ago in Berlin, mm-hmm, and I think it's also interesting to see
seeing
that, where you see a little bit of what the background, yeah, is of the company and where we're going in terms of sustainability.
Nice. I will make sure I link everything when we post the podcast. So thank you so much.